The Mantis and the Moon. There was once a mantis who tried to catch the moon. He wished to sit on it and cross the sky each night so that all the animals would say, "There is the mantis traveling on the moon. He must surely be a god, and we should praise him." Then the mantis could ride majestically at last, looking down on the great dry desert where he lived, at the camel thorns and empty watercourses, and the herds of springbok gazing up at him. He would be proud, for they would think he was really a god, and every creature would revere him. But the mantis was just an insect, and the moon was far away. Even the night birds, whose shadows dipped across the moon's face, would never reach it. So how could a mantis fly there, he with the short, whirring wings? Still, the mantis was a dreamer, and when he sat rocking back and forth on a twig, or cupped in a leaf, he thought only of the moon and a way to get there. The moon was elusive, for it did not always rise at the same time. The mantis decided to catch it as it peered over the horizon. Then it was big and cumbersome and clambered slowly into the sky. For when it was high and white, it was distant, moving swiftly, and often it disappeared before it reached the far horizon, becoming faint and white like a fragment of forgotten cloud in the rising light of the sun. The mantis waited impatiently all day until the shadows crept out from under the stones and the bushes. He watched until the sky was pale green, where the last daylight and the blue darkness met. And when the moon rose, it came so silently he nearly missed it. There it was, caught in the branches of a camel thorn. The mantis flew to the tree in short, urgent burst. He hurried up the trunk, half running, half flying, climbing between the thorns and the drooping frods of tiny oval leaves. The moon was above him, pinned by the topmost twigs. He struggled upwards and pounced, but he overbalanced, and when he steadied himself to spring again, the moon had gone. It was cradled in the branches of a baobab, resting quietly. It seemed waiting for the mantis to unharness it. The mantis flew with a whir and a click of wings to the foot of the baobab, which stretched up its mighty branches to tangle with the stars. He started up the trunk, a long journey for a small creature. But when he reached the cradle of the tree, the moon had climbed ahead and was anchored to the branches high above him. The mantis flew towards the moon, determined to catch it before it broke loose. But when he got there, it was gone, moving on, smaller and swifter and very far away. As the moon waned, it rose later each night. The mantis was drowsy with watching and too slow to reach it. There were times when there was no moon at all, and the desert creatures were uneasy. For although the moon always returned to light their grazing grounds, slim and curved and supple as a hunting bow, perhaps one night it would just keep on falling into the great wastes of sky below the earth and never turn and rise again over the desert. The mantis tried to catch the young new moon, but it was lithe and swift, and even the acacias could not hold it with their sharp white thorns. "I shall make a trap," declared the mantis, and he wove a rope out of dry grass and tied it in a noose around a stick. He hid among some rocks on a high ridge so that he would be above the moon when it rose, full and orange, and as heavy as a calabash of thick, sour milk. When his noose was silhouetted against the moon, the mantis tugged, for surely the rope would tighten around it long enough for him to scramble up. But the noose knotted on itself and fell empty to the ground. The moon rose higher, undisturbed. The mantis crept into a bush to think, and there he pondered, brown as the dead leaves caught in its tangled stems. Somehow he must catch the moon and ride on it. How else could one so small be a god? There was no other way to be noticed and praised by the animals. He cut a stake and sharpened it and set it on the hilltop. It would pierce the moon and hold it like a big white baobab flower caught on a thorn. Again the mantis hid as the moon rose above the ridge of hills. It moved slowly towards the stake. "O foolish moon," he cried, "now I have caught you, O wise and cunning mantis." But the stake only traced a shadow on the moon's face, and then the moon was gone, climbing higher up into the night. The mantis shouted with rage and broke the stake in two. He went to plan another way to outwit the moon. He made a dejani, a length of reed and a partridge feather tied to a short twist of sinew weighted with a stone. Tossed into the air, it would spiral to the ground, fast as a falling star. Surely it would twist itself around the moon and bring it down. When the moon was new, a small sickle he could easily capture. He took his dejani up into the tallest baobab and waited. When the rising moon was level with his hiding place, he flung the Dajani at it. It flew like a whip, curling around the curve of the moon. Then it dropped gently, the feather fluttering like a small falling bird. The Manish yanked the stone from the Dajani and threw it on the ground. The moon became full once more, and the Manis followed it to see where it went when it sank below the horizon. He flew from bush to bush, from stone to stone, watching it travel across the sky. He came upon a water hole deep in the sand, trampled by many hooves, and there, far below, was the moon, caught in the water. Stealthily he crept down the steep bank to where the coarse, dark sand was damp. He paused, gazing at the bright, hovering disk. He pounced on it, clutching at it with his spiny claws, but he sank gasping under the water, then struggled to the bank wet and afraid. And still, the moon lay there, bright and glowing. Many times the Manis tried to pry the moon out of the water, but he failed. At last, in anger, he took a rock and hurled it, cursing the moon. The stone shattered at the reflection, and 1,000 splinters of moonlight pierced the Manis's eye. Blind with pain, he ran away and hid in a thorn tree. He could not ease the splinters from his eyes, and in everything he saw were brilliant beams of moonlight. He could not sleep. There was no darkness in which to rest. He no longer wished to be a god and sit astride the moon so that the desert animals would praise him. He wondered how he ever could have hoped for that. He crept up the thorn tree to where the branches reached into the warm evening air. He waited there until the moon rose, to him a great fragmented light. He held out his front legs to it, folded up because he was praying, and he begged the moon to give him back his sight. He swayed gently on a twig, his head bent, a small and humble insect. And the moon kept on rising, higher and wider than before. Then at last it set at the edge of the desert's barren waste, and still the mantis sat, bowing to it as he prayed. When the daylight came, the moon appeared pale and steady, and the shadows of the thorn trees fell sharply on the sand. Bird flight was clear and swift, and the mantis knew the moon had taken all the splinters from his eyes. That was long ago, when the great herds wandered freely from the sea to the vast dry plains of the Hekum people. But the children of the Manis lived there still, brown and green as the leaves that changed with the seasons. And they sit, their forelegs held up in praise of the moon who forgave and restored the sight of their ancestor, the small, short-winged one who wished to be a god.